to those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is the God Journey.
Well, they say you don't know what you've lost until it's gone. Man, is that ever true? And I want to tell you a little bit about it. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson, host of the God Journey. With me today is my best friend on the entire planet.
Hi.
And that's the familiar voice, hopefully to some of you, of Miss
Sarah Jacobson.
Yes, my wife Sarah. She's come joined us today. Many of you know from some of the things we've hinted at over this summer that we've been through some real transitions in our life, and we knew there'd come a day when we'd want to talk about it on the podcast because we felt the sense, calling, whatever, to over the last number of years live our lives in a fairly public way, as a hopefully to encourage other people into a genuine journey with Jesus and transformation that evokes. And so we've committed to being pretty honest about our life and our journey with people as it kind of unfolds. And this summer brought some new surprises for both of us, to
yes.
say the least.
Yes.
And we're going to talk to you a little bit about it, but we're going to do under this proviso. Sarah wants to talk about it. I've not drug her onto this podcast. She wants to talk about it, but this is the last time she wants to talk about it, pretty much. Yeah.
True.
At least publicly.
Very true.
And what I mean by that is one of the things Sarah's discovering about herself is she's not the public person that my life kind of forces her to become or would seemingly force her to become. I've never forced her. I've never tried to make her be anything different than she is. But the expectation, because of my travel, because I talk about our life, lots of people want to know Sarah, too. And they, everywhere I go, next time you come, you got to bring Sarah. And I'm going, well, I'll bring Sarah when Sarah feels called to come. But I don't bring Sarah just all over the world because it just, it's not your bailiwick.
Oh. No, it's not my thing.
The traveling is one part of it. Just being with strangers a lot and giving people access into her life. And just even having conversations all day long with people. That's not what fuels your life.
No.
And one of the things we're coming to grips with, it's pretty neat, actually. I actually love this, is that Sarah's not really called to the same public personage that I am. That's why she doesn't always travel with me. Partly it's just because of that. Partly it's because she heard things I've sharing probably a few million times. And we live them, so it's not as important for Sarah to talk about it. But Sarah's a mom and a grandma and a wife and a daughter of God's, and she is a more local person, loves to live her life out right where she is.
A more private person.
And her help with what I do in ministry often leads a lot of, particularly women, to write or call and want Sarah to help you get through your stage of the journey, whatever that is. And maybe because you were a high school counselor, people have the expectation that that's your deal.
Yeah, but that was academics. We dealt with some social issues, but it's a different type of counseling.
Yeah, so we're going to share part of what we've been through here. We know that's going to resonate with some. We know some of you are going to want to have a deeper conversation with Sarah. And what we're going to try and tell you up front is not so much. We're going to let Sarah be Sarah, and we're going to talk about the story here. Hopefully that encourages you, and God can provide the same resource to your life that he's provided Sarah in the people you know and the people close to you. And so really want to not have this podcast trigger a whole lot of people that want to share their story with Sarah and get Sarah to help them maybe even get over similar things in your life, because it really isn't Sarah's to do, it's God's to do.
Yes.
And isn't Sarah's calling so much. So if you do write emails or make phone calls or want to be drag her into that, we're going to give her the freedom not to go there. And I'll encourage folks not to as well. But this part of the journey for us began over a year ago, really, even though we didn't know it.
Yeah.
We were in Spain, and I'm going to tell most of the story because Sarah, again, she wanted to be part of it. She's going to throw in when she wants to throw in, but we were in Spain about a year and a few months ago, and for the first time, you had a panic attack in the middle of the night.
Well, I had years ago, just a couple in the last 20 years, but I wouldn't say.
It's not been a recurring theme in your life at all.
No,
it's not been anything we've been too serious about. And at the time, you didn't even know it was a panic attack. You woke up in the middle of the night feeling a little claustrophobic and
couldn't breathe
and just felt trapped.
Yeah.
And those kind of continued over the next year. unbeknownst to me. I mean, Sarah's telling me in the morning, I had a little trouble breathing last night, woke up. And so I knew something was going on, but I had no idea that they were full-blown panic attacks. Sarah wasn't calling them that. I don't think she owned that that's what they were.
Doctors have different, I don't know. I mean, I would probably say panic anxiety attacks. I don't know if the medical term has a difference in that, but anyhow, it was where I couldn't breathe, couldn't get a deep breath.
Half a dozen times a month. It wasn't every night. But it was frequently enough to be a concern. Now, I don't know. I mean, I know that's going on. We did some medical stuff to make sure heart's good. And Sarah has the lowest blood pressure of anybody on the planet and the lowest cholesterol of anybody I know. If we could trade, even out those numbers between Sarah and I, that'd be great. But we can't do that. So Sarah carries a great medical history.
But yet, even with that, you know, when you don't, you have a hard time getting a deep breath.
Yeah.
And you never know with, you know, heart attacks and women's types of symptoms are different than men's. And so I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would be getting dressed and not, because I didn't know. I mean, I didn't want to wake you unless I was really
serious.
Seriously thought that I was.
So she didn't wake me. And sometimes you're up for an hour or two at night and not waking me. So I don't know. I'm a pretty sound sleeper when I'm home. So I just... Anyway, in November last year, about a year ago now, you were listening to a song.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
What from Josh Groban's song. I don't remember exactly when. I think it was last fall sometime. You Are Loved. I don't have the lyrics in front of me. I'm not sure exactly all about.
It's about being trapped behind this wall of silence, and everybody deserves to be heard.
Understood.
And understood. And I will be with you, and I will walk you out, and...
And when I heard that, I'm thinking that God gave that to me and that that was something that he was going to do for me. But boy, I didn't.
She didn't have a clue what that meant.
No, and I didn't. I mean, I mean, there was things that I wish I was understood more. But I didn't know the depths of and really what it meant. I know that it was, he just had that. And then, you know, I didn't kind of. Really, I mean, it's not like I sat around and every day I would think about the song and dwell on the song. I mean, when it would come by and I would hear it and then I would, I mean, I like the song, but, so that, I mean.
But again, you didn't share that with me.
No.
At the same time, there's some tensions going on in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Not overt, just very subtle, but I was sensing a withdrawal, a bit of your life emotionally from mine, and you were sensing just things that were going on were more hurtful to you than they had been. But you always have a hard time being honest about hurt because you pretty much think it's your fault.
Yes.
If you're hurt, it's not my fault for saying something stupid,
No. Which
I have great capacity to do, but it's her fault for that somehow getting to someplace in her. So, and we had a couple of conversations during this time where I just say, hey, I feel like you're kind of more distant and what's going on, and we never got to anything with those things.
I probably discounted it because I would think, I don't remember what I said, but discounting that and what, because I mean, I just was unaware pretty much of what was happening inside internally.
Yeah, but 37 years married, I mean, we've had moments, we've had periods like this in our life as life's grown on and we've changed. There's adjustments that go on. So nothing was real alarming in all of this other than we were trying to find our way through it. And then I was in Russia in early May.
Yeah.
And Sarah had wrote me an email and said she'd gone out and had a massage with our daughter. And so I made the crack back because I'm a humorous guy and I usually get into conversations in humorous ways. So I made some crack about, living the high life, huh? And then, you know, how was it? And was it relaxing to you? And I got an email back from Sarah that was a little bit, I mean, I could tell from what she wrote back that you had been offended or hurt or whatever by my comment.
Yeah.
And it came back pretty cold, pretty distant. And so I wrote and tried to clarify. I was just kidding. I guess your mom had a real bent against country club type people who get massages and things. And so
a big bent.
The comment about the high life made Sarah feel like I thought she was wasting our money doing things, even though it was a gift certificate, which I wrote back and said, man, I don't care if it's a gift certificate or not. If you want to get a massage with our daughter, you're more than welcome to do it. And if anybody in this marriage has not been the spendthrift, it would be you. I mean, you are very frugal. So the idea that I would think you're living the high life on our money is just ridiculous to me, but it wasn't to you.
No.
So I wrote back and kind of expressed that, and then you wrote back an email that was, we're not going to detail all the emails
here.
Yeah,
I don't remember all what I wrote back.
But I remember writing back, and it seemed like there were a lot of things over the course of my life and our family's life that were surfacing as being hurtful to you.
Mm-hmm.
This was very challenging to me. I mean, I'm in Russia, first of all, and I'm being translated all day long, and I'm getting these emails late at night, so I'm awake at night processing some of this. But without getting into all the details of it, the gist of it was there were things now that were hurtful to you and mm-hmm. things you were bringing up from 37 years of our married life, things 20 years old, 25 years old, comments I'd made, something said in the family, and all of a sudden you're taking offense at these things. And it was, oh, man, I felt so destroyed. I'm thinking, well, how does she not know that we are kidding? Has she been carrying this? And I even wrote to you, I felt like our marriage had been a lie. Has our marriage been a lie? Have you been carrying all this hurt? And Wayne's just totally oblivious to it and didn't know it. And
yeah, no, but I was responding back, though, that saying that it wasn't a lie. But I think it was, I was trying, even though however hard it was, but I was trying to be honest. And I don't know what I would say for the first time. I was trying to be honest, and it was also being honest for myself, because if there's ever, and not just you, with anybody, usually in my whole life, if there's been a difference with one other person, I always assume and that I'm the one at fault. And I'm the one that has to change.
And if I'll just act better, then the other person will be okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, we won't detail all this. This was the best conversation probably we've ever had, even though it was incredibly painful.
Very hurtful.
It was by email, which was significant because there were times I thought, you know, I'm just going to Skype Sarah and get all this sorted out. But every time I got ready to do that, I just felt this check in my heart saying, don't do it. Don't do it. Just let Sarah, because we've had conversations where I've asked you pointed questions and you just stare at me. And I've felt like you're not being honest.
I don't know what to say.
And what's going on in you is you don't have an answer yet. You haven't processed that. You don't know what to say. But I feel like you, because I'm such a quick talker, the only reason you wouldn't be talking is because you've got something to say you're afraid I'm not going to like, so you're going to not say it. And so when the communication was so clear between us, even though bits of it were hurtful, very hurtful, I just felt like the Lord said, let it play out this way. Let it play out. And it's horrible because I wanted to get on a plane and fly home. I've told Sarah whenever I've traveled in the world, I will come home if you ever need me on a moment's notice, because there's nothing I'm doing anywhere that I couldn't go home from and then go back later and finish if I needed to. And I've wanted you to know that I would come home. But I didn't feel like that was what I ought to do either. And so we just let this play out. And part of it, I know we've joked a lot. I've joked a lot in the last 15 years about the pre-94 and the post-96 era. You went through some major changes in your life 15 years ago.
Yes.
And really became a very different person. And Now what we're telling you about now is a whole another depth of change that now we joke about Sarah 3.0.
Yes.
This one is real different yet again. And in a lovely way. The other change was lovely, too. You're more honest. But now this is more honest to huge degree.
See, I think of the 94, it was like, you can't see it, but my fingers are
she
like.
She got a one-inch mark here.
But then there's like, you know, a mild difference, and it's inside. Because this, in the emails when we were exchanging, I was I know I was expressing things that if we were face to face, I would not probably in my gut be able to do that just because of the.
You'd be so self-aware that you probably wouldn't even think through what you really should say.
I couldn't be able to see, and I know, and I don't mean that as a cop-out, but I was able to express in words, even that was hard to express in words. And to see in writing feelings that I was facing about myself that I had never faced again. I don't know if that
before. And you were discovering some things in this conversation, too.
Yeah.
Because your hurt was really directed at me starting out.
Yes.
And by the end of it, we found out that that's not where it was directed at all, even though I've done more than my share of messing stuff up, for sure. But
and I don't know if I really realized or connected. I mean, I know it was coming out in the emails, but I think when you got back, and I know you'll get there in a little bit, but when you came back, finally, I think that's where I was starting to see when we were talking at different times, the connection between how I responded was from words and actions that were the words and actions that were being said. I was responding from ways from childhood,
from a deeper hurt.
Yeah.
But before we got to that point, I'm in Russia and I've gotten this email or two that's kind of pointing out to me, at least, I've been the world's worst husband for you. And that's not what you were trying to say to me.
No.
But when I'm hearing all these comments from 15, 20 years ago and what they've triggered in you as a matter of response, and I feel like not only did you make a major change 15 years ago, but I did too in the way I approached you and the way I approached this marriage. And really feeling like one of the things that was really important at that time was I felt like God said, you know, Sarah spent 25 years chasing the visions of your heart. It's time for you to spend time chasing hers. And so that was really where we lived, where we moved, your vocations, the different things you did vocationally and going back to school and get a master's degree. Those were all things where I was tremendously supportive of things that you were involved in, even though I wouldn't say I wanted to move there or I wanted to do that. But I was in. I was in because I really wanted you to unpack your life. And I was encouraged by the stuff that was going on. And so when all this came up and I was feeling like, man, the last 37 years have all been a lie, even though that's not your point. That was what I was feeling in the pain and tiredness of my anxiety. And I was laying in my bed one night, 3 a.m. in Russia, in the attic of this apartment flat. And I felt like God asked me if the only way Sarah could know true joy is without you, would you let her go? And my answer was no. God, I can quote scriptures to you, how absurd that is, that I would let Sarah go and I would offer her a way out of this relationship. And I wrestled with God for 3 hours, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And I'm teaching all day, translated in Russian. I've got all kinds of stuff going on. I'm so exhausted. I don't even have what it takes to resist God anymore. So I finally said to him 3 hours later, if Sarah could only know joy without me, yes, I want her. I want her to be everything you've made her to be on the planet. And if I'm a barrier to that, I'd be willing to step aside. I'm in tears. I'm crying, saying this to God. I'm praying. And I wrote an email to you, and I pretty much expressed that. I said, darling, I don't know how this has gotten messed up. I don't know where we are, but if you would be happier, if you can't find your joy with me, I will make it easier for you to go on without me. But I did say this to you. I promise you, I'll never stop loving you. I'll never stop waiting for you. I will die with your name on my lips, because if I can't love you up close, I will love you from afar. But in writing that letter, in the wrestling I went through 3 hours, honestly, I felt like this marriage was probably over. I mean, I laid it down before God and said, if it's over, it's over. I'm committed enough for you to be who God made you to be, that if that's what it takes. I wrote you that. I didn't hear anything back for 2 days.
Well, first of all, I mean, it was a very painful emails back and forth.
Yes, it was.
And I'm not, I mean, all those words, every word I wrote, it was, for me, being the non-writer I am, was...
Well, you wanted the email dialogue.
It was... I mean, it was a wrestling in my heart trying to figure out what to say. I mean, it was a big to express what I was saying. And at the same time, I was, you know, processing some of the things from the past, too. And so that was...
And thinking about the offer a little bit?
And the kids had been over. And so there was a time, Sam, and I wasn't working on that. And so, yeah, there was a time where there was... I don't remember if it was.
Yeah, it was
a couple of days.
I remember that.
Like,
plus a time zone difference. I mean, late night and is your early morning for you. So it may have been a day for you. It was 2 days for me. And it was 2 days of I mean, I felt like my marriage was over. I remember wandering around Russia. I was, you know, with other people. But any time I had a moment to myself, I was thinking, she doesn't have any idea how much I love her. She doesn't know. 37 years. She has no idea. And I've lost the most precious thing I've ever had. I mean, it was 2 days of dying. At the same time, I'm giving away my life for people. And the times I was overcome with emotion where I had to apologize, saying, listen, there's something going on at home. It's bigger than what's going on here. And people were incredibly gracious to me in Russia. But I finally got an email back from you, and the first line of it, I think, was something like, honey, I will never be happy without you. And, I mean, I was like falling into a refreshing pool of water on a hot day. I mean, I was so thinking this was over and so had let you go in my heart and determined to come back here and make that easy for you, but love you from afar and try to win you back. I mean, I was plotting all these ways, not to manipulate it, but just to genuinely let you know you were loved. And when that first thing came, I was so grateful, first of all. But then the email began to unpack. I mean, in great detail. I understood why it took you a couple of days to write the email. It was, tell me about this Josh Groban thing, quoted the lyrics, typed them all up so I could see what God was saying in your heart, that you had been having these panic attacks. I hadn't known about it. And then you were beginning to discover at that point that really it wasn't the comments I had made over these 37 years, because they hadn't been hurtful to you at the time. I mean, a couple of them had been, but mostly it wasn't. But they'd pointed back to things that God was revealing from your childhood that defined you in a way that God wanted to set you free from. And it's not blame the parents' time. It's not really so much that, but it was just the family dynamics of your home led you to believe that you didn't have much to contribute, that you were, the word you've used is that you're stupid.
Yep.
Is that okay to say that?
That's fine. I know you were trying to think of another word, and I just said, I can't think of another word. I know.
So she's stupid. And that she finds her worth just by serving everybody else around her. And I noticed, first time I was in Sarah's home, I noticed some of the dynamics of this home are really warped. I even said that to you.
Yes, you did.
And she just said, oh, it's just the way they are, just the way my sister is, my mom is. Now, your dad was a very affectionate presence in your life. You were through this really missing your dad, because he was very affirming, very affectionate, which is...
I'm a lot like my dad.
Probably the saving grace and all this thing. But some of the stuff you got from mom, sister, others, teachers... was that you were the stupid one.
Yeah.
And you internalized that in a major way.
But I didn't even know. And that's the big thing. Even still, until you were coming back, I don't think that a lot of those pieces were being pieced together to where the coping mechanisms that I had developed at childhood where I was reacting to those things. I mean, I didn't know. I mean,
coping mechanism became, I'm just going to serve everybody around me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make sure nobody has a reason to be disappointed in me. And I'll be so busy serving that people won't have time to get to know the real me, because if they got to know the real me, they'll know I'm stupid. Now, what's really strange about that, from those of us who know Sarah well from the outside, there's nobody Sarah knows that would ever think she's stupid or think she is. Yep. Sarah is an incredibly brilliant, wise, wonderful homemaker, mother. She graduated with honors, both with a BA and a master's. She's the most educated person in our family. She's the only one with a master's degree. And she graduated with honors. Everybody around her, and just the way you cope with life, the decisions you make, the way you arrange your family and life, everybody around you would say you're incredibly brilliant.
Except myself.
But she didn't know that. And so she's afraid if people really got to know me, they'd think I'm stupid. So I'm just going to stay busy. And the problem with Sarah's coping, if it had been alcohol, if it had been drugs, if it had been eating, if it had been some other thing that people used to cope, it would have been obvious there was a problem here. Your coping mechanism looks like to people around you like a spiritual gift of hospitality and service. And you have people over, and Sarah's just overboard in caring for their needs and not realizing the only reason she's, not the only reason, but a big part of why I'm doing this is so that I'll stay busy so I, one, don't have to think about things I don't want to think about.
I don't have to feel.
And two, I don't, people aren't going to talk to me and get to know me in a way that I'm going to find embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we didn't know that.
I didn't know that. I mean, at times you defended me to people in my
family. Yeah.
And for me, when I wasn't even, first of all, feeling it, asking it, or even needing it, because I didn't realize.
Some of it you felt, because you were real hurt by some of those comments.
There were some
things. I'd go back and confront and say.
But I think that would be more after 94, that, you know, those times.
That would be late, yeah.
But before that. I mean, before that, I would never even give it a thought. If you were to be defensive, trying to be defensive for me, I would dismiss it because I wouldn't believe it. And
yeah.
So this literally were things that I did not know about myself, and it felt very surreal too at times to realize the state and where I was at.
And I downloaded the Josh Groban song when I was in Russia. He sent me the lyrics, so I downloaded the song on iTunes, and I'd listen to it every day, and I'd pray. And it was a song for you that was very encouraging, because you
Hopeful.
Heard God's voice in it.
It gave me hope.
For me, I would sit there and just think about, how could she be trapped in this wall of silence? How can she not know? How can she not know? I found the song incredibly painful in the sense that my little girl, without being... I don't mean that to be dismissive,
yeah, I understand.
But my little girl's been wounded, and I didn't know. You didn't know.
No.
And yet, man, my heart just broke for you when I got on that flight to come home. I couldn't wait to get back home to you. And you were going to come get me, and you were so emotionally, it's been an emotionally racking week for you. It's been that way for
mm-hmm.
me, but man, I didn't even know how you were going to come down and get me. So we arranged another way to get you to the airport so we could get home together. And when I came home, I came home literally, I had lost you. And now I had you back. And having you back for me meant I'm just happy to be in your life for whatever reason. So I came back with zero expectations. I mean, we've always joked, more recently, you know, we got married 37 years ago. Two very selfish people got married. And I now, especially through this incident right now, Dave Coleman said this to me a lot, and I've never really understood it till now, that marriage is really the incubator in which God deals with our selfishness. That really by living together with another human being, you either grow together and lose your sense of selfishness, or you manipulate the heck out of each other to try and get what you want. What love is to most people is mutual accommodation of self-need. I'll do this if you'll do this. And you negotiate survival, but you really don't know affection until you're willing to lay down your life for each other. And it really is scary if only one of you is going to lay down their life for the other. But your coping mechanism specifically has meant for 37 years, you have laid down your life over and over again. Not always in a healthy way, but you've given up what you would have wanted if you allowed yourself to want, which you didn't.
No.
But you would lay it down for the kids, for me, for other people in your life. So my selfishness, I don't know that it hasn't always been as poignant as dealt with, I guess. Coming back, man, I just wanted to love you. And I was already, people know, if you read my blogs and things, been in a real place of winter. The winter of my life, as In Season points out. I mean, really getting all spiraled up in the shack thing and windblown and all the stuff that was going on around our lives and then the legal hassles of all that. And my life had been so taken over by things that I absolutely don't believe in. And felt like my life was just pushed to the edge in so many ways that for the last 2 years, I've been untangling myself from all those things to get back to the simplicity. And I'm really asking, what is, you know, the first 20 years of my adult life was in ministry, professionally, trying to be a good Pharisee, trying to help other people be a good Pharisee. Last 20 years has been learning to live loved and having my Pharisectomy and helping other people learn to live loved. And now coming to the end of that, and now letting go of a lot of things that defined that time, the God journey, the way it used to be. And I really thought it was a place to kind of start, what is the third act of my life? And what is that now as we're coming to the close of my life and the scriptures and the pastorals that have really touched my heart a lot when Paul writes Timothy and says, complete the work God's given you to do. That's been a real part of my prayer life. God, what completes the work now? I'm almost 60. I've got another maybe 12, 15 years of trying to be somewhat productive, maybe. What completes? Not just carry on with the momentum. I could keep writing and traveling and speaking. The momentum of my life is such I can keep going on without any thought about anything. But I've really been putting all that aside to say, what is the third act? How do I complete the work? And so part of it, and I don't think this is necessarily going to be true, but part of it I said to God, if the third act is loving you well, then that'd be act enough. The line from The Notebook, which in the movie I don't necessarily love, but I love the first line of the book. The guy who's telling the story in the movie says, I've done one thing in my life. I've loved a woman well. That sentence captures me. And it always has since I heard it. But even more so now, if all of my life was to learn how to love you well, that'd be life enough. If it let you be all that God made you to be. And I came back with that in my heart, particularly because I let you go and got you back. Came back and I was exhausted. You were exhausted, emotionally wasted. And I got home. I said, listen, there's got to be the deal. You're never awake alone. If something's going on in the middle of the night, you're having this attack, I want to be with you.
Yeah.
And you said, what are you going to do? And I said, I have no idea what I'm going to do. But I want to be with you. And will you wake me up? And she said, well, not tonight. You just got home from Sarah's. Always. I said, no, tonight. When will you sleep? I can sleep whenever. I don't have a real job. I can sleep whenever I need to sleep. And that night you woke me up. And for the first time, I saw what you were going through. And it killed me in a good way. I saw my little girl, the lady I love. I saw her curled up in the fetal position in fear and shaking and not even be able to say why, not afraid of a certain thing or whatever. And so, my goodness, I just grabbed you, held you close. I knew the song, the lyrics. I was whispering those in your ear. Mm-hmm. I was praying for you. I was talking to you, just loving you, just holding you, just letting you know you were safe, that I would protect your heart. And that was one of the things you said in one of the emails, that you didn't feel like I would protect your heart. And oh my gosh, that's one thing to hurt the worst, because I think I've always protected your heart, not always wisely, but always meant to. And
I think that night, it's the only way to kind of describe it would be there was like 58 years of pent up
pain
that was being released. And
it was as if God, I look back and say, it's as if God was not going to let your coping mechanism work. That's where the panic attack started, even though we didn't know why.
Uh-uh.
It's God saying, I'm not going to let this work anymore because I want you to see what's underneath your life. And we've had this discussion. Why did it take 58 years? Why does it take 37 years of marriage? I've told God, this would have been great in year 5 or 6 of our marriage, but I don't know that either one of us would have survived
it. I never even saw it.
Yeah, and I don't know that our relationship would have survived it at that age. I don't know that I could have responded to you in a way that would have been healthy.
I don't know.
Somehow, what I know is God started this. He started it in Spain. He talked about it with you in November. This is His. So now we're in the middle of this thing. I'm home from Russia and Holland only for a 2-week stay, and then I'm off again to France. Now I'm thinking about canceling France. People in France have offered, France offered to let me cancel or reschedule these things. But you didn't want me to. You want me to go anyway, because part of this, you were coming to Paris.
Yes.
Your favorite city.
Yes.
I don't know why.
It's Paris.
It killed me to leave you. We'd had 4 or 5 nights in those 2 weeks and we're being up with you. Each time was growing less. Each time was less deep and quicker to recover. And I was encouraged by that, but I just didn't want to leave you again. I didn't want to not be alongside you in the middle of the night if you needed it. And plus, we were now going to sleep with me holding you in the same way, just to give you that sense of safety as you're going to sleep. And I knew I'd miss that.
Because I found in holding me, that's where I found it slowly goes away. It slowly goes away.
And physically, some of the pain goes away.
Yeah.
In your chest and heart. Yeah. So I went on to France. You were going to come on to Paris. I had some things scheduled in Paris, but I really felt like, no. You're coming over. I just want 3 days with you alone in the world. And then a week before you got there, I was in a bathroom in Pau, France, doing a workshop down there. And I walked in after lunch to freshen up before I was going back out to speak. And I was asking, what's next? What's next? And where are we going in this conversation? And words as clear as I hear them. And they shocked me because I felt like God said, these days in Paris are my gift to Sarah. And I don't want you to mess them up. And I wrote Sarah and told her that. And she wrote back and said, no, Paris has got to be about us. We'll do whatever we want. Because I said, we'll do whatever you want when you want.
And I said, no.
And we don't have a lot of time now. I know the podcast is running long, but we had the most incredible 3 days we've ever had together. We'd been to Paris before, so there wasn't a lot we had to see in terms of sightseeing. It was just walking through the city and enjoying the gardens and 3 days of just conversation about our lives and God's work in us and drawing closer and deeper. And we said about coming home from Paris, those are the three best days we've ever had together.
Yeah.
And what I've understood from that, I mean, because my prep was, this is my gift to Sarah. Don't mess it up. So when we got there, it was whatever you want, when you want. And I wasn't weird about it, but I really was just anticipating what you would want, helping you find that. And when I got in the cab to go to the airport the next morning, we were leaving, and I was thinking about we were driving out there. It was early, so we were half tired. But I was saying to God, these are the best days ever. And I really felt like for 3 days, I could just totally serve you. Just serve the gift of God. And I was going to the airport. I know that God said it. I feel like my eyes were open to the fact this wasn't about 3 days in Paris. This is about a way to live, a way that you've always lived towards me. You've always served God's gift in my life. Maybe not always from the healthiest platform, but I've not done that as well for you, I don't think, in 37 years. And I really, having thought I lost you, got you back, now alongside you, in a way I've never been before, and inside your pain in a way I've never been with any other human being before, and watching God transform me. I said at the end of the summer, it's the best summer I've ever had with you. Even though it's still painful, some of this
process is
painful for you still.
Yes, and it's a lot of hard work.
But there's no pain between us right now, and there's just love and support and honesty and conversation. And we just got back from an hour walk with the dogs up here in the mountains where we've been staying for a couple of days, and it's a foggy, cold, wintry day. It was great. And just keep sharing our hearts. Keep finding a way into what makes Sarah freer to be Sarah. And one of the things I thought was sad is, and we noticed it dating. Going back in our dating days when I'd say, well, you want to go here for dinner or you want to go out to a movie? What movie you want to see? Oh, whatever. We've even discovered, well, Sarah's afraid to have a want. You've never allowed yourself to want anything.
No, never.
So even when you try to say, what do you really want? It wasn't that you weren't being honest about your wants.
I don't have a want.
You didn't have a want.
It's a lot of work to have a want.
Not for most people. That's funny.
It is a lot of work. There's a lot of work that it is very tiring because we've read some books. And I mean, there's several books and that kind of starts conversations when things happen. And then you talk about certain things. And I mean, it's just little bits of conversations where we see how my thinking and processing of life and living life is skewed, is or
for sure.
And
so now you're learning to have wants. It's a little bit of work.
It is a lot of work. It's not a little bit of work. It's a lot of work.
But take your life 5 months ago to where it is now.
I wouldn't want to go back, but it means, I can't go back either now. And I don't want to go back, but I can't say that I'm not totally, fully through everything.
No. But the changes in your life to this moment, I mean, I'm totally blessed by.
Yeah, I can see. I mean, part of the thing is now I'm recognizing when things or when my thinking and I'm responding.
And I'm recognizing when I say something, how you hear it.
Yes.
Which is not necessarily at all the way I mean it.
So I'm recognizing it, but I haven't gotten to always living it because then you kind of go through the process where I have to. There's a lot of self-talk.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talking to myself, trying to even to think of myself that I'm smart or wise or whatever term you want to say. Not stupid, I guess. That's
And you're not responsible for everybody's happiness around you.
Yes. I mean, it's a lot of talking out loud to myself, a lot of talking between us and helping me to try and feel. And it's not like I mean, it's just a lot of work.
But there's joy and rest and laughter that's filling into your life right now that wasn't there 5 months ago.
You probably see that more than I am.
There is.
And the fact that I'm even recognizing it, I know than that. You know, when I'm recognizing, okay, this is not a good way to think. And normal people, healthy people, I guess that's probably a better way. Healthy people don't feel this, don't think this way. Yeah.
And one of the books that's really helped us, people want to say, oh, I'd love to talk to Sarah more about this, and we're encouraging you not to. And Sarah's even shaking her head. Please, just let me be Sarah, and let me grow in my garden and love my family. And I really don't think my life being public necessarily means Sarah's life has to be public any more than she wants it to be. But if you really want help for this kind of thing, I couldn't recommend a book more highly to you than a book Sarah and I read together. It's Brené Brown. We've heard about her before. We've done some of her stuff on dead.com. If you haven't heard those, I'll post the links so you can see those at the end of the podcast. But then her second book, she's done three now. The first book's really bad. It's just a mishmash. There's no order to it. The third book is just kind of a repeat of the second. The second one is so focused, so good. It's called The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. She is a sister. She's a sister in the Lord, even though her books and her audio presentations are to secular audiences. So she's not quoting Scripture, but if you know Scripture, she's dealing with shame and how shame gets resolved in our lives. And though she doesn't add the Jesus removing it at the cross component, just from what she says, you know that she knows it. And if you don't have that component, get it from Transitions or He Loves Me or somewhere else, because it is shame that twists us up. And it's the cross that frees us from that as God now reworks a way of thinking in us. That's been our dialogue. So if you find yourself feeling like you're stupid and your stuff doesn't count and people have been dismissive of you or you're coping with that by all kinds of things, rather than call Sarah to walk you through this, let me encourage you to buy Brené's book, The Gifts of Imperfection. Husbands, if you love your wife at all, read it together. I'm more convinced than ever that what marriage is about is not you have kids and you stay sexually pure the whole of your life, and that's God's goal for marriage. God's goal for marriage is that we learn love by the person who's closest to us. And we don't deal with their selfishness, we deal with ours. And there is nothing about what Sarah and I have been through in the last 5 months and what we're living in now that I would trade for anything. It has been painful. It has been hurtful. We've cried our eyes out. We've laughed our heads off at times.
Yeah. Done a lot of talking.
Done tons of talking, but we've connected at such a deeper. And what was it that Les Mis, the quote from Les Mis, to love another person is to touch the face of God. When I've loved you the way I've loved you, you've loved me in this whole thing, and we've forgiven a lot of stuff. We've wonderful ways of just owning failures, mistakes, loving each other past it. That's as close to godliness as we get. And having it with you and experiencing it now at this age of our lives, this part of our journey, it's caused me to love other people differently that we're just visiting and traveling and being with. That there's a way of loving that's not self-centered and self-based, and it's not what it does for me. It's how do I simply am in the world to love another person. And I hear from, because of the blogs I've done about marriage recently, I did a couple recently, particularly on those that just feel like, well, my husband has no desire for this kind of connection. And I would just say to husbands who don't, you have no idea what you're missing. To connect with another human being heart to heart, to let them be in your life, and to be there as a supportive, constructive lover, and not there as someone trying to manipulate for what you think you need out of the relationship.
Yeah.
Is one of the greatest joys in the world.
Yeah, just the fact that you want to jump into the pain in my life in that way. So unbelievable and so surreal, but now I'm kind of past the surreal stage and really knowing and facing what.
This has been so good. I have loved this. I have loved this year more, this summer more than any. It started very painful, the start of the summer. It has turned out, and we're still in the middle of this, and I love the honesty. We've shared it with our friends and family. Our kids know all that we've shared with you.
Yep, we do.
Again, we feel like our life is an open book to some degree, but I'm the one that does that. Sarah's not the one who's going to live as an open book for people she doesn't know to either try and find out more about her or to help them in things that you just can't counsel someone through email. You can't. You got to have somebody in your life, even if that's a counselor or, you know, just an older brother or sister that can be part of that with you. So we're really going to ask you to respect Sarah in this. I'm asking you to, and if you might get an email from me saying, appreciate your response. I know you'd love for Sarah to give input here. She's just not going to. God has other ways to do this for you. So I really pray that you'll respect that for my wife. But this journey will continue. We'll talk about it more as things unfold.
I've talked about my story a lot more than this one. This one has been different. And this has been like I said, I have no problem with you talking about it. And I'd rather you share some of you kind of do a better synopsis of mine, because I think maybe because I don't know if I'm trying to figure it out too much. This is just real more private because it's just for me this time around, for me talking about it. And I think it's more because maybe there's things that I'm still processing. I'm still in the middle of it. And I don't know what new stuff I'm going to ever face day to day or what things happen and come up. But it's still being a process that I'm working out and learning.
Yeah. And we still don't know what this is going to change about us, the future of Lifestream, how I engage the world. We still don't even know what all that's going to be.
No.
But we'll unfold it with you. We'll let that kind of happen as it happens up the road. But we want to tell you this part. It's been such a big deal for us. And
yes,
the biggest encouragement I have for people is the kind of love that Sarah and I are finding now and have had tastes of through 37 years. But this is so much more real, and whatever you need to let God do in you and willing to lay down your life for your partner, not to be abused or exploited, not talking about that.
No.
But there's a way to connect with each other. We've had a marriage book we've been working on. Someday we may actually write that puppy, and that'll be maybe a little better help. But for now, this is going to have to do it. Anything else you want to say, sweetheart?
No, just that I'm thankful to you for the place that you've put your life into my life.
Man, it has just been a joy. I don't feel like I paid some huge cost. I love my girl. I want to see her have everything God has for her. And we're going to find it.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.